fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Mobrig, and today on Route 51, our story is one of second chances and reinvention as we talk to a retired elementary school principal from central Wisconsin who is pursuing a new calling and a new mission, one that is saving lives halfway around the world and cleaning up a mess left over from another generation's conflict. When Jim Harris stepped down from his position as principal of Weston Elementary School, it was not a typical retirement. Jim Harris turned himself into a bomb removal specialist, spending several months every year in Southeast Asia, in the country of Laos, working with the native Hmong population to dig up and defuse unexploded bombs left over from the Vietnam War. It is a calling that Mr. Harris felt compelled to do after he traveled to Southeast Asia to help the families of the Hmong students that attended his elementary school. And he discovered the depth of the problem there that they face in their everyday lives. Jim Harris now leads his own nonprofit organization, We Help War Victims, which relies entirely on donations to pay for its work and hire the people in Laos who help him with this difficult task. Jim's work is now the subject of an exhibit at the High Ground Veterans Memorial Park in Neillsville. And joining him by telephone is June Berg. She's the Learning Center Coordinator for the High Ground. Also with us today, Peter Yang, the Executive Director of the Hmong American Center, which is based in Wausau. Our subject today is one of patriotism and service, and the kind of selfless devotion to a good cause that underlies the true spirit of the Christmas season. We'd like you to join the conversation today by calling us at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Jim Harris, Peter Yang, June Berg, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Jim, tell us something about this organization of yours, We Help War Victims.
Yeah. My wife and I founded this organization over 10 years ago. We had been traveling to Laos for many years, and we had discovered problems in Laos related to the legacies of the Vietnam War. And we were also involved with the Hmong community here in Marathon County. And so we founded an organization that would focus on the needs of refugee families in our own community and to the survivors of the war in Laos.
When you speak to audiences, you call your presentation the eternal harvest. What does that mean?
Well, you know, Americans are very used to thinking about our warriors coming back from conflict and putting the conflict behind them. And we've had a luxury because most of the major conflict in our history has occurred overseas, and we've been able to leave the battleground behind. But for the people of Laos, the consequences of the war, even though it ended 40 years ago, are very real. And the term eternal harvest refers to the legacy of leftover ordnance. Laos is the most contaminated country in the world in terms of cluster munitions and other ordnance left behind. And on average, every other day in Laos, a bomb goes off. They've had 20,000 casualties to leftover ordnance. So that harvest of old ordnance will go on for a long, long time.
How many of these unexploded bombs are littering the countryside there?
Well, there's a wide variety of ordnance. If you think of bomb as the mental image that most people have of a canister 6 or 7 feet long and 30 inches in diameter. There were 4 million bombs that size dropped on Laos during the war, and that was a country of 3 million people. So every man, woman, and child in Laos could have gotten their own big bomb, and we would have had enough leftovers to go to Milwaukee and give everybody two. But the real killer to this day in Laos are the cluster munitions, little tennis ball size bomblets that were dropped on Laos. And we know we dropped about 280 million individual units. We think there's 70 million left.
That is an incredible number for a country of 3 million people. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And you've got a sample of that here with you. Now, of course, our listeners can't see it, but it looks like the top of a tennis ball, about that size, made out of metal, mm-hmm.
and
hollow inside.
Well, These were dropped out of an airplane, 670 at a time. And the basic theory was that it was a more efficient killer to drop 670 one-pound bombs than to drop one 600-pound bomb. Every one of the little cluster bomblets has 300 steel ball bearings. And when a load of 670 go off, they cut everything over 3 football fields to ribbons. But there's always about a 10 to 30% failure rate. That's why we know that if we drop 280 million of them, they're probably between 70 or 80 million left.
Peter Yang, what do you think of Jim Harris's work?
Jim and Marty have done incredible work, not only here in the Warsaw area, but in Laos. I know that take many trips to Laos, as Jim mentioned, and have helped so many Hmong families and the Hmong community in Laos. And so we're so grateful to have people like Jim and his wife here in our community.
Peter, it's been, what, 35, 38 years since the first Hmong refugees came to central Wisconsin from Laos?
Yeah, it's been 38 years. The first Hmong family that came to Warsaw was April 1976, so it's been 38 years.
Now, we often get the idea that all of the Hmong people left Laos for America, and there aren't any left there, that they all fled persecution, but that's not true.
No, that's not true. I think we probably had about 300,000 Hmong people living in Laos before 1975, and about a third or about 100,000 that may have left the country. And so the majority are still living in Laos.
And these people, have they been able to integrate into the overall Laotian society? Are they still persecuted? What's their status like?
Well, as you know, Laos is still a communist country, which means the government is still very strict in a lot of way in terms of, you know, people's ability to do things. For example, religion. You know, people are not freely practice whatever belief they want. In particular, Christianity. So the country is still very strict in a lot of ways. I have not been to Laos, but I understand that many of the Hmong people who were living in the countryside, especially in the northern part of Laos, have moved to the central part of Laos and have been integrated into the Laos society and have had a better life. But I know that there are still many living in the countryside in the northern part of Laos where they still practice agrarian lifestyle, still live in very poor lifestyle, like we used to 30, 40 years ago before the Hmong people came to America.
Is there still the wholesale slaughter and the kind of persecution we saw 35 years ago, or is that a thing of the past?
I think it stopped, although we still have a few Hmong, groups of Hmong that are still in the jungle, working as resistance or are not afraid to come out to join the government. And so those people are still facing struggles.
So it sounds like for your people, the situation has improved over the past 35 years, but it's not good yet.
No, it's not totally. The government is still very strict. And like I said, you know, for those who used to work for the United States CIA in particular and are still they're still feeling unsafe to join the government and to have a normal life.
How concerned are the Hmong residents in the Warsaw area about the problem of these unexploded bombs in their own country and the toll it's taking on their loved ones overseas?
Oh, it's a big concern. It's a big concern. I know that Hmong families here in America in the Warsaw area still have relatives or even their own family members living in Laos. And I'm sure many of those families are experiencing the bomb explosion, as Jim mentioned.
June Berg, why is this something that you felt you should highlight at the High Ground Veterans Memorial Park?
Because we just felt that Jim and Marty's mission really coincided with our mission of healing and education. What they're doing, you know, so many of our Vietnam veterans themselves here have no idea how many leftover unexploded ordnance are still there. After coming through Jim's exhibit, they have learned so much themselves, along with our general public and, of course, our children. You know, our kids here in the U.S. don't have to fear going outside to play or, you know, going out to dig up some worms to go fishing or something like that, and fear that, you know, by doing that, they could lose their lives. Where the children there and the families there, every day, this is a threat for them. And this is something, like I say again, that, you know, we had no idea. So it's just a way for us to continue the education of another aspect of the Vietnam War that so many people don't know about.
June Berg, the high ground is located near Neillsville, and you do have this learning center there. What will people see if they come to view the Jim Harris exhibit at the center?
They will see the actual, you know, bomblet cases that Jim was talking about. They will get the information on how many are there and how the process, the actual process that Jim goes through and his crew to remove these and safely detonate them and clear the land so that, you know, the villagers can continue to live a safe life and, you know, move on from this.
How long will this exhibit be on display there?
It will be on display through the end of December.
And when is the Learning Center open this month?
It is open 7 days a week from 9 to 5.
All right, very good. And if you just joined us, we are talking to Jim Harris. He's got an organization called We Help War Victims. He's a former Weston Elementary School principal who has a new life since retirement. He spends several months every year going to the country of Laos and digging up and defusing bombs, hundreds of thousands of them that have been left over from the Vietnam War. Jim is our guest. There is a link to his website on our Route 51 Facebook page. Peter Yang of the Hmong American Center is also with us, as is June Berg, the Learning Center coordinator of the High Ground Veterans Memorial Park in Neillsville, which has an exhibit dedicated to Jim's work. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm particularly interested in hearing from Vietnam vets today and what you may think of this problem and the fact that here, 40 years after the war, we are still dealing with its consequences. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. Jim, when did you retire as principal at Weston Elementary?
Yeah, I retired in 2003, and prior to that time, I had already made, I think, 5 trips to Laos. I was collecting teaching artifacts for my teachers, and I was visiting the families in Laos of students in my building. So I could come back at the end of a summer vacation and find students in the hallway and say, I found your grandfather, he's still alive. Or I found your uncle and aunt, and you've got new cousins. But it was that first initial exposure through summer travel that led me to believe I should commit myself more fully to the problem.
Well, your school obviously had a high percentage of Hmong children attending it.
Yeah. We went through a rapid change. When I took the principalship, we had almost no minorities in the building. When I retired in 2003, we had 147 Hmong American children in the building.
What challenges does that place on a local elementary school, having that large an immigrant population there?
You know, I felt very lucky to have that population in my building. And I confess that during the last 10 years of my career, I got a lot of sympathy because people thought, oh, it must be a real challenge to have a building with that many low-income families, that many ethnic minorities. And I confess that the truth was they were wonderful families. I really felt blessed to have Hmong American kids in my building, and I admired their parents. Great work ethic. My job was a lot easier than I got credit for.
As a principal, how involved did you get in the needs of these families and your students?
Well,
it sounds like what you did is pretty extraordinary. I mean, actually traveling to Laos while you were a principal.
Yeah, it was something I felt we should do. My wife was in a building in the Wausau School District with a similar experience. We traveled together. About 20 years ago, we opened up our family farm in Kronenwetter to any low-income family that wanted a free garden space. And we started our first takers of that offer were Hmong American families. And over the years, we've broken new ground, expanded gardens. This last year, we have 60 Hmong families gardening on our property. And so I can wake up in a summer morning with my window open and hear the sound of Hmong singing coming across the fields. And as I awaken, I wonder, where am I? Am I back in Laos or am I in Kronenwetter?
Peter Yang, this is pretty extraordinary, the way he has opened his arms to these immigrants coming into the Wausau area and the work that he's doing, not just here, but overseas in Laos.
Yes, Jim and Marty have been great friends of the Hmong community. I mean, there are many others out there too in the community, but they are a very good example of good friends for the Hmong community. They not only provide, their garden space or land space for Hmong people to garden, but, you know, they make great efforts to help the Hmong families in Laos. And so it's just incredible work that they've done.
And Peter, is this typical with Hmong children concentrated in just a few local elementary schools instead of being spread out across an entire school district?
Well, I think it's not quite the case anymore. I mean, when we first came to the Wausau area here, the Hmong families, of course, they were low-income families, so they live in certain area in the school district, and so their children go to certain school. But over the years, for the last 10 years, 15 years, I've seen Hmong family moving out of the city of Wausau, living in the surrounding community, and therefore their children are going to other schools all over the Wausau area.
So as the Hmong people have become more integrated in the overall society, as they've become more prosperous, they're not anymore just confined to these low-income neighborhoods. So, of course, the schools become integrated.
That's correct.
You have a number of school children who visit the high ground on a regular basis, Juneberg. How do they react?
They are to this exhibit specifically or to the high ground in general?
Well, give me both of them.
Okay. This exhibit has really actually taken them to heart. I mean, literal jaw-dropping. We have, on average, probably 5,000 to 7,000 students that come through the high ground a year. So that's a large number for our small area. And they really do want to learn about our history. And, you know, so they really get involved with the actual tours of the high ground. Then they get to the Learning Center, and, for instance, Jim's exhibit, mm-hmm. they have spent more time looking through his materials, reading, and, you know, Jim created a video that about his work and what they're doing over there, and they really paid attention to that.
Are they surprised that you have all of this unexploded ordnance in this one?
Oh, very. So many of our young folk, you know, I mean, they don't have any idea what a bomb is other than what's on Xbox.
Uh-huh.
So to actually see it firsthand is very surprising to them, the size of them, the amount of them, and to, after watching the videos, to see the kind of damage that they can do, you know, and the force that they have is very shocking to them. Another thing about Jim's exhibit that really has made an impact on the kids is not only is it just the unexploded ordnance that they help with over there, but they also help with replacing homemade prostheses. They help with the deformities that are also related to all this. And so, you know, many of our kids didn't understand Agent Orange and things of that nature and the deformities that can be caused and how it's passed on from generation to generation. And after going through Jim's exhibit and us, you know, because he's got the photographs of the befores and afters after they've done the surgeries for these people, and they see the homemade prostheses versus, you know, the good ones.
Yeah.
That Jim supplies them with, it's very, very touching to them. It kind of makes them think twice about, okay, well, maybe, you know, the kid in my class that has a slight deformity or something, you know, maybe that's why.
You know,
and they're not a freak.
Yeah, kids can be so cruel, and it does help, I think, for them to see an exhibit like this and see the challenges that people who are in that situation have to face in their day-to-day lives. Jim, tell us about that. Tell us about that part of your work.
Yeah, the task that we find most heartbreaking when we go into a village would be the children who show evidence of birth defects from Agent Orange exposure. And we see children with cleft lip, cleft palate, facial tumors, short arms, club foot. And these are the survivors. You know, in a rural country like Laos that's so impoverished, most children with those severe deformities at birth will die in infancy. So what we're seeing when we see a large number of school-age children, we know that's just the tip of the iceberg. And while we're in the village to do bomb and landmine clearance, we never turn away a victim. So at the end of every work project, after a couple of months in the village, we collect the amputees, the children who need corrective surgery, and we take them to various centers around Laos and other places in Southeast Asia where they can get proper treatment. And then they return to their village after that.
Who pays for all of this?
Well, you know, I'm really glad you asked that because, see, one thing you should know about elementary principals, we take a lot of credit for the work that other people do. You know, I was very proud to be Principal Weston School. I thought it was a terrific school, but it was terrific not because of me. It was terrific because of the staff I had and the parents we had for support. The same is true of our organization. We Help War Victims. I sit here and get credit for it, but in fact, we have wonderful sponsors. About 50% of our annual budget comes from donations. And the other 50% comes from the sale of coffee that I bring back from Laos. So as I sit here hearing people say nice things about our organization, nice things about me, the reality is if you're a member of a congregation like Good Shepherd or St. Anne's or First English Lutheran Church, that we've had so much support from those congregations for coffee sales and for donations. They're individuals, service clubs, and schools. The children who got surgery last year to correct birth defects, most of that money came from Mosinee Middle School and Marathon Elementary School. We wouldn't have an organization if we didn't have broad-based support.
How do you go about selling this coffee?
Well, the coffee's... You know, I wasn't raised to ask for money, so I'm probably the worst person to work for funding for a nonprofit. I just wasn't raised to take anything that I didn't work for. So about 3 years ago, we stumbled on the idea of selling coffee. And while it's really hard for me to ask for a donation, I can look people in the eye and sell them coffee because I know it's good coffee. The country of Laos would be one of the top coffee producers in the world. They have a place called the Bolivan Plateau that is fabulous for coffee. The right volcanic soil, the temperature, the humidity, everything is proper. The problem is during the war, that area was heavily bombed. And so for 40 years, people have aspired to put a shovel in the ground and plant coffee trees, but they don't dare dig. We come in during our stay, and we clear the land so they can plant the coffee trees. Years later, when the coffee plants mature and they have coffee to sell, I bring that coffee to America. See, I'm in it for the long haul. January will be my 18th work trip to Laos in 15 years. So it's fun for me to know that the coffee I'm selling now in America is from land that we helped clear years ago.
And Jim, if people want to find out more, your website is wehelpwarvictims.org.
That's right.
And there is a link to it on the Route 51 Facebook page. We're talking to Jim Harris, a retired elementary school principal who travels to Laos several months every year in a humanitarian effort to dig up and defuse bombs. And there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of them left over from the Vietnam War. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 1-800-780-9742. Again, we're particularly interested in people who lived through the Vietnam War, people who are Vietnam veterans, people who, for whatever reason, remember that era and were here at that time. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-780-9742 or put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. I'll read it live on the air. Peter Yang of the Hmong American Center and June Berg of the High Ground Veterans Memorial Park also with us today. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, Jim Harris of We Help War Victims, an organization that helps dismantle and dig up unexploded ordnance or bombs left over from the Vietnam War in Laos. Jim is a retired Weston Elementary School teacher. Peter Yang of the Hmong American Center is also with us today, as is June Berg of the High Ground Veterans Memorial Park in Neillsville, which has an exhibit that is dedicated to Jim's work. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones right now. Ray and Rhinelander, you're on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Yes, I worked with the first Hmong people that came to Wausau. It was a very positive experience, and all the different things that they related from their country to here. There was a lot of misunderstandings at first, but obviously as time went on, a lot of things were incorporated with them and what they had to contribute in the community. I just feel very blessed that I was able to do that. Also, getting to the point of the show and the facts you're talking about, most people don't realize there was more armaments used during the Vietnam War and projected in that part of the world than all the stuff that was used during the Second World War and maybe even the First World War. And that is a lot of munitions used. And that, of course, explains why all these different deadheads and things are laying everywhere there, and they're still exposed because the math is, and this is proven, there was more munitions used and exploded in that part of the world during the Vietnam War than the Second World War. And I want to thank the Hmong people again for what they've contributed here, and I enjoyed working with them when they first came to Wausau.
Ray, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's get a reaction first from Jim Harris.
You know, the things that were dropped have a long, long life in the ground. You know, when I talk to groups, one of the common phrases that I hear, people would say, well, certainly we've cleaned that up, or certainly it can't still be dangerous. The truth is, most of the ordnance that was dropped has a life expectancy in the ground of about 100 years. So a 40-year-old cluster bomblet is really just a teenager. And there are 2,500 contaminated villages in Laos. And the presence of those bombs, it does more than just threaten life and limb. People live in fear of any economic activity that disturbs the soil. And so we've come into villages that are impoverished, not just because of the danger to lives in the village, but out of the fear factor that people are afraid to take a shovel and enlarge a garden or plant a cash crop. They live in fear every day of their lives.
And Peter, your reaction to Ray's comments?
No, I appreciate James Ray's call. And you know, when the Hmong people first came here, they received a lot of help and support from local churches and community members. And so over the year, you know, we've been able to integrate into the local community quite well. And so we just, you know, I mean, the Wausau area community have been so amazing, and they welcome their arms to help the Hmong community to make us, to make sure that we succeed here in this community.
And June Berg at the High Ground, your reaction to Ray's comments about the sheer amount of the ordnance that was dropped on Laos and Southeast Asia?
I want to thank Ray for sharing that. Again, you know, something I have learned just recently through Jim's exhibit at the you know, mass amounts that were there, and but you know, I didn't have it in relationship to, say, you know, the World War II amounts like he just. So I want to thank him for educating me on that. That's something new I can take back again with me.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Yasha in Wausau. Yasha, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, that's right.
Your comments for Jim Harris, Peter Yang, and June Berg.
Actually, it's a question. I understand that your source of funds is for this project is from contributions and from the coffee sales. I'm very curious to know why the U.S. government is not giving you financial help, since they and their corruption caused all this problem.
Excellent question, and I want to represent this fairly. America does give money to the effort. Unfortunately, the figure that they give is inadequate. This last year, America gave $10 million to Lao to fund a full year of work on clearance. That's equal to the cost of 4 days of bombing during the war. You know, Lao was subjected to incessant bombing for 9 years, the equivalent of a bomb load of bombs every 8 minutes around the clock for 9 years, at a cost of $150 billion. Well, in 1968, we were spending $2.5 million a day on that bombing campaign. So today we give $10 million, equivalent of 4 days of bombing. And the money that we do give doesn't fund any American effort. We give our money to other aid organizations. Most of the money that we give is given to a British group called the Mines Advisory Group, and they do the work on our behalf. So we have the talent, we have the resources. We could have a massive effort in Laos if we had the will, and we could be doing more to clear.
Yasha, thanks so much for the phone call. Jim Harris, let's talk about operationally how this works. How do you actually, when you travel to Laos, how do you get the people together, and how do you remove the bombs, and what kind of training did you need in order to learn how to do this?
Yeah. Well, I spent almost a year working for a New Zealand clearance organization, and I originally joined that effort using my skills as a teacher. They invited me to teach Lao people how to teach risk education in the schools. So I was training staff to go into schools and teach children and villagers how to be safe. After about 3 months of that effort, I began working with a rapid response team. And that team would be on call to go any place in the district where bombs were discovered. And that's the sort of work that I've continued after I left that year of work within the New Zealand organization. My work plan is really pretty simple. I hire 12 Lao people to work with me. They may be Hmong, they may be Lao, they may be other ethnic minorities. I need a driver, I need a medic, I need a cook, I need a team leader, and a number of D-miners. And I raise money in America so I can pay their salary. Then I lease our equipment from a commercial bomb clearance company. So I get a couple of trucks and a half dozen metal detectors, tents, forks, spoons, kitchen kit. And then we head off into the targeted site, and we pick one of the most contaminated areas in the country. For the last 3 years, we've been down in the old Ho Chi Minh Trail area. And we set up our tent in a village that's contaminated, and we clear ordnance.
And, Jim, how difficult is it to get to that countryside?
Oh, it's a bit of work to get there. We have at least 2 or 3 days of overland travel within the country getting to the site. Where we work, it's usually where the roads have ended. And often we have to hike into the areas where we're going to do clearance.
Let me read something off of your website. These are your words. Yesterday, I led the way across a narrow stream. The guys walking behind heard the loud crack of boards breaking, and since I immediately fell out of sight, they dashed to the bank to see what had become of me. I wish, for the sake of my self-esteem, that I could say they were concerned for my safety and rushed to my aid, but truth be told, these jokers just wanted to enjoy the sight of me covered in muck. From my splayed position below, I heard their laughter before I saw their faces peer over the bank. If I'd had more Lao language at my command, I would have touched them up. Did you guys come to rescue me, or are you just here to show me your tonsils?
Yeah.
You're in your 60s. You know, this must tax you a little bit to, have to take these long treks into the Laotian jungle and the countryside.
Yeah. The 12 Lao fellas, and it's sometimes Lao men, sometimes Lao women on my team, but they get younger every year. Most recently, I have 40 years on most of the team. So these are young men in their mid-20s, early 30s. I do my best to keep up with them. And I think when people ask me how much longer will I do this, for me the key thing will be, am I a benefit to the team or will I ever slow the team down? When we have a piece of ordnance reported to us, we have promised people that when we get a report, we will make that item safe within 48 hours. And we have a lot of hiking, trekking, burdensome work that we have to do to get to the ordnance. And I don't ever want to be to the point where I'm a burden to the team. But it's really critical that when a piece of ordnance is discovered, that something happens quickly.
Jim Harris of We Help War Victims, he's a retired Weston Elementary School principal, spends several months every year in Laos helping to dig up and defuse and render harmless leftover bombs from the Vietnam War. There are thousands, hundreds of thousands of them littering the countryside. Peter Yang of the Hmong American Center also with us, as is June Berg, who is the Learning Center Coordinator at the High Ground Veterans Memorial Park, which has an exhibit on display through December dedicated to Jim's work. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to weigh in. 1-800-780-9742, particularly interested in Vietnam veterans or people who remember that war back in the 60s and 70s. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our guest today, Jim Harris, the founder and president of We Help War Victims. You can find out more at wehelpwarvictims.org. There is a link to that site on our Route 51 Facebook page. We also have Peter Yang of the Hmong American Center with us today, and we have June Berg of the High Ground Veterans Memorial Park, which has an exhibit dedicated to Jim Harris's work on display there through the month of December. Tell me about this, one of the first trips you took to Laos, Jim, and why you became so impressed that this was something that you needed to dedicate your life to.
Yeah, the first trip was going to be a once-in-a-lifetime trip, and I thought I could justify the expense, the time away from my family, and that it would be something I would do once, come back, and then get on with my life. But while I was there, I met victims of accidents with ordnance. And, you know, when you talk to a mother who's just lost a child to an accident, you really struggle to have anything meaningful to say. And commonly, when that experience has happened, I've pledged the mother that I would do what I could to make sure that another child wouldn't die. And so coming back from Laos, having made that promise, I knew I would have to return. And that's led to 18 trips to Laos. I don't much like to ponder the number of lives I've seen damaged by old ordnance. I just try to take one village at a time, one farmer at a time. I've tried to teach my grandson that, you know, we can't change the world necessarily, but there's no excuse for inactivity. If you face a problem that seems too big to change, well, we can't change the world, but we can change one person's world. And so the joy I take in my work and the thing that keeps me going back is the opportunity to come into a village and know that not only do we make people safe from injury, but we open up economic opportunity for them to plant bigger gardens, plant a cash crop. And it keeps me going back.
How has the Laotian government reacted to your work?
Well, the Laotian government is supportive of the work. There are other organizations. Our organization is very, very tiny relative to the mine advisory group that the Brits fund, the Swiss Demining Federation, SODI, the German deminers, they're Japanese, they're even Norwegian demining groups functioning. And the Lao government is dependent on those groups to provide services to keep people safe. So I've had a free hand to take my team where we need to go.
Even in a communist country that was guilty of so many atrocities 30 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the country really is changing. Over 80% of the Lao population today was not alive when the war was on. It's a very young population.
Well, that's because they killed all of them.
Now, it's a young population. There are now 6 million people in Laos, but 80% of them were born after the war ended. So there isn't the sort of lingering animosity. Laos has an authoritarian one-party state, but I've been able to function within that limitation.
Can you criticize the Laotian government?
No, I think we're careful about that. And I have to be especially careful because I might say things critical of the government from the luxury of Wausau, Wisconsin, but the people I work with, the team members I have who live there, I don't want any repercussions for them.
Peter Yang, are most of the Hmong people who are still in Laos, do they want to stay there now and make their country a better place, or are they still looking to get out?
I think there are still a small number of them that would like to go to a third country if they can, but they know that they're not considered refugees anymore after more than 30 or close to 40 years. And so, yes, they are living there. That's their home. That's their country. And so I would say all of them now are living there, considering themselves as citizens of Laos and do whatever they can to be part of the government of the country.
Oh, you have a cultural distinction between the main Laotian population and then the Hmong population, which speaks a different language, has a different culture. Are they integrating together at this point, or are they still separate?
I think they're integrating a lot more now compared to when we were living there, before 1975. You know, most Hmong live in the countryside, in villages, and our children went to, their own schools, and so we were not integrated with the Lao population. But I think right now, many, many, Hmong families have moved into the lowland, being part of the, Lao community and being integrated into the Lao society. And so, but you know, Hmong have different culture and different language, as you said. And so, you know, that will continue.
And June Berg, the high ground really got its start thanks to Vietnam veterans. Isn't that true?
Yes. Our founder, Tom Miller, along with several other Vietnam veterans, Tom made a promise to his friend as he lay dying in his arms that his service and sacrifice would not be in vain, and the service and sacrifice of other veterans would not be in vain, that there would be a place that would, pay tribute to their service. The High Ground is a veterans memorial park. We are not a war memorial. We do not celebrate war in any way, shape, or form. We celebrate the men and women and the families that had to endure it. We are there to help them heal and move on and to educate, as I said, you know, our public and our next generations as to the cost of war, the human cost. And that's exactly, you know, what Jim does is through what he's doing helps us, you know, educate our public on the human cost and of these conflicts.
Jim Harris, how do Vietnam veterans react to your work?
I've had a very, very positive reaction. You know, a lot of the vets left 35, 40 years ago, tried to put the war behind them, maybe didn't think much of the war. They felt that part of their healing process was to simply put it behind them. But I find when I have my display up, there's a healthy curiosity. People want to know what became of the people they witnessed in Southeast Asia. And so it's been good. There are some vets who have a very hard time looking at the images that I have on display, because for some of the vets who've experienced the worst tragedies of war, those images are quite painful. But overwhelmingly, I felt very well received in Neillsville.
You know, we fought this long, bloody war in Vietnam. We lost more than 50,000 U.S. soldiers. We lost the war. We created a situation in which hundreds of thousands of civilians were killed. Many more became refugees. And now we're buying goods from communist Vietnam. You can find the clothing and shoes in our department stores. And there are even luxury resorts on the South China Sea catering to rich Western tourists. And you have to wonder, was it all worth it?
Is that directed at me,
Glenn? Yes, it is.
Well, you know, I think that's a staggering fact that many, many vets ponder, you know, because a lot of them brought back, you know, painful physical injuries, painful mental images, the legacy of Agent Orange exposure. And there are a lot of vets who ask me about my experience there, and they're wondering, too, 40 years ago, if we had made different choices, was it really necessary to be involved in that conflict as we were? Or were there other ways in which we might have influenced the geopolitics of the area? I happen to think that there were alternatives, but that's not the world I live in. We live in the here and now and live with the consequences, and I'm just doing my best to make life livable there in Laos for the victims.
And June Berg, it's been 40 years. Are we ever going to heal completely from that conflict? Do you see progress?
I do see progress. Every day I see progress. We have, you know, families that come in that, thanks to the high ground, they've found a place that they can start letting go of this torment that has eaten them alive for 40 years. We find wives, you know, that stand behind their husbands telling us, thank you, for what we've done to help their loved one. So I encourage, you know, any and all veterans, doesn't matter what era, what conflict, and their families, come out to the high ground, you know, experience it, experience what we have to offer to help in that, you know, mode to getting back to what as normal can be.
June Berg, thanks so much for joining us today. And Peter Yang, I'm going to leave you with the final word. I think an indication of how we are progressing and healing in central Wisconsin is the fact that you changed the name of your organization. It is now no longer the Wausau Hmong Mutual Association. It's the Hmong American Center, because you are no longer dealing with immigrants. You're dealing with citizens.
That's correct. The Mutual Assistance Association is basically a self-help organization helping immigrants and refugees in this country. And so after nearly 40 years, we felt that it's time for us to change the name. Most of the Hmong people here in central Wisconsin have become U.S. citizens. So
that's
what we
changed.
Yes.
We want to thank today's guest, Jim Harris, the founder of We Help War Victims. You can find out more at his website, wehelpwarvictims.org. Also, thanks to June Berg, Learning Center Coordinator for the High Ground Veterans Memorial Park in Neillsville. You can find out more about the High Ground at highground.org. A reminder that the exhibit on Jim Harris's work is now on display at the Learning Center through the month of December. Also, thanks to Peter Yang, Executive Director of the Hmong American Center in Wausau. You can find out more at wausauhmong.org. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer and our on-air producer, Rick Ryer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. And next week on Route 51, we take a local look at a hot subject, race relations in America, with Joe Johnson, author of Nobody, Perseverance of a Sharecropper's Son. and local teacher and commentator Daryl Mayfield. Remember to follow us on Facebook. If you missed part of the show, you can hear it in its entirety Friday evening at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. The program can also be downloaded at wpr.org/Route 51. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.